This chapter was taken from the Food and Feelings Workbook, written by Karen R. Koenig. Chapter 11, titled Loneliness. Loneliness. Table for one, please. Perhaps Noah loaded his ship two by two not only to ensure preservation of the species, but also because he understood how much living things crave companionship and connection. We all need to carve out time for ourselves, but the fact is it's natural to get lonely for what people have to offer. Empathy, comfort, validation, conversation, respect, amusement, mature love, stimulation, exchange of ideas, wisdom, feedback, a sense of mutual purpose, a mirror in which we can see ourselves clearly. Of course, some of these needs can be met in other ways. You and your lab can join a volunteer rescue team and share a mutual purpose. You can amuse yourself watching TV or playing computer games, feel joy harvesting fresh vegetables from your fall garden, or gain wisdom by reading the classics. However, nowhere else can get you the whole package but in another human being. Loneliness is vastly different than being alone by choice. Solitude can bring peace of mind and quiet joy and contentment. It can refresh and revitalize the spirit by re-engaging us with ourselves, with nature, and with our private passions. The pain of loneliness, however, springs from a darker place because separateness and disconnection are not of our choosing. How do I know if I'm feeling lonely? Loneliness, more than some other emotions, has a strong physical component. You may feel heavy or leaden, listless, hollow, bored, or antsy. You may have a sense of being isolated, apart, and excluded, even experiencing a surreal sense of being on the outside looking in. Loneliness is a feeling of discontent about disconnection and aloneness, an ache for human contact. It's not related to the number of people in a room or in your life, and is as much about depth of attachment as breadth of connection. Isolation and disconnection can be intensely depressing and are often accompanied by feeling unwanted, unneeded, invisible, sad, abandoned, rejected, and helpless. The belief that you're unloved and unlovable can be such a strong undercurrent through loneliness that it strikes at the very core of your self-esteem. Feeling worthless, hopeless, and set apart from the human race, you might wish you'd never been born or even want to die. Let's stop and feel. What are you feeling right now? What is the purpose of loneliness? Loneliness is pretty simple and straightforward and lets you know that you want people in your life. If chronic, it can reveal a disappointing scarcity of relationships or expose the shallowness of your so-called friendships. Pangs of loneliness may also be a testament to the deep attachments you have and miss. Although feeling lonely directs you towards people, you may have to dig deeper for answers to find exactly what you're lonely for. For example, maybe you have lots of friends with whom to go to movies, shows, sports events, and out to dinner, but only one or two with whom you can truly have a heart-to-heart. In this case, loneliness is telling you that you want less activity and more intimacy. On the other hand, perhaps you have three or four friends with whom you can bare your soul, but none of them who like to roller skate, ski, play chess, bargain hunt, flea markets, or take in a baseball game. In this case, loneliness is pushing you to get out there and find people who will share your passions. What factors influence my experience of loneliness? In spite of the fact that feeling lonely is a universal emotion, nature and nurture both play a part in determining how we experience it. The following are primary contributors. Biology. The desire to attach is hardwired into humans. Parents have an innate desire to care for their offspring, and children have an equal inborn need to seek care. Once again, nature is at work making sure the human race survives and flourishes. However, attachment is not a one-size-fits-all dynamic. Infants exhibit varying needs for attachment and closeness. Some crave touch, adore being coddled, and can't bear being apart from their caretakers, while others cry the minute they're picked up or fussed over, but burble happily when left to their own devices. Even when they're barely out of the womb, some newborns appear to suffer markedly less from being left alone than others. Down the road, our biological inclination interacts with our upbringing to determine our interest in and tolerance for attachment. And then there's parent-child attachment. We have to slip into rewind mode to understand another significant contributor to our experience of loneliness, early attachment to our parents. We're born through connection, initially through joining of a sperm and an egg, and then through adherence of the fetus to a mother's body. Even when this concrete bond is severed by birth, we're still tightly tied to our parents by a physical and emotional dependence on them. Healthy attachments early on are crucial to development. Without them as infants and children, we would die. Without them as adults, we may suffer overwhelming chronic and pervasive loneliness. Let's look at how healthy attachments are formed. When parents model a spousal relationship that includes a reasonable balance of closeness and distance, and when they provide us with similar mix, we learn that we can have people in our lives when we want them and also can be alone when we need to be. If the bond with our parents is basically sound, we're comfortable letting it slacken and are able to go on to form affiliations with relatives, friends, teachers, and neighbors. As time passes, many of these relationships end and we develop new ones, which teaches us that life is an endless series of connections and disconnections, attachments and detachments. When separations occur, we're not frightened because we've developed inner resources to cope with our feelings, and also assume that if we keep reaching out, someone will eventually be there for us. In adulthood, we will feel lonely occasionally, but it won't cause excessive distress. However, the process of early attachment doesn't always go well, which may set the stage for negative experiences with people and consequent loneliness in adulthood. Sometimes, our primary caretaker, usually mother, is unable to give us what we need in infancy and childhood, and healthy bonding with her is difficult or impossible. For a variety of reasons, she may be distant or overly intrusive, or an unpredictable, arbitrary combination of the two. Or a parent may have a lengthy illness or die at a very young age. Grief-stricken, we may be scared to form relationships because of the pain of losing them. Unable to satisfactorily attach and later separate appropriately, we may become clingy and/or withdrawn when our needs are not adequately met. Then there's parent-parent attachment. Now, earlier, I mentioned that when parents display an appropriate balance of closeness and distance with a spouse, we learn the meaning of healthy self-regulation in a relationship. Sometimes people, even spouses, want to be close and sometimes they don't. Sadly, many parents have trouble with intimacy and are unable to provide a healthy model. One way the relationship malfunctions is when parents have little or no physical contact with each other, barely speak about personal matters, or basically function in separate orbits and don't appear to notice or mind. Since disengagement teaches us that people don't need people and that getting close is wrong and unnatural. Another way we end up with faulty assumptions about intimacy is when parents are overly involved or enmeshed, such as when they constantly speak for each other and refuse to spend a moment apart. From this, we learn that people must be in each other's pocket or something's amiss. With either dysfunctional dynamic, we develop unhealthy beliefs that later contribute to our adult expectations about relationships and leave us feeling lonely. Either we yearn for closeness but don't feel it's our right and even sabotage ourselves when we do connect, or we push people away in fear of needing them and end up being overwhelmed by our needs when we try to handle them alone. It's easy to see how inadequate early attachment and poor modeling of intimacy can lead to ignorance about and fear of connection. Because of our upbringing, we may not have learned the skills for connecting or even recognize its tremendous value. Although desperate to have people in our lives, we may not know how to start or keep relationships, leaving us frustrated and lonely. Or we may deny a need for intimacy and pretend we're fine without it, which only means we're unaware of our loneliness, not that it doesn't drive us in unhealthy ways. Disconnection from self. Another contributor to loneliness stems from a disconnection from authentic self. If parents are disconnected from their needs and emotions, they can't teach us how to connect to ours. Nor can they model how to act positively and proactively when we feel vulnerable because of our yearnings. Instead, we get the message to protect the inner self at all cost. When we learn early on to cut off or shut down feelings, to distract ourselves from them, or pretend they aren't there, we eventually become emotionally numb. Just as we have to love ourselves before we can love other people, we have to be connected to ourselves, into our authentic emotions, before we can connect intimately with others. In this case, the cause of loneliness is not isolation from other people or withdrawal of companionship or affection, but our distance from ourselves and what we feel. Inclusion and exclusion. A sense of being excluded can strongly contribute to the pain of loneliness. We learn about inclusion and exclusion in our first group experience with our family of origin. When as children we feel loved, valued, and included, loneliness is an infrequent and fleeting feeling. When it visits, we only have to remember that warm, fuzzy sensation of being part of a loving group, and the insecurity disappears. In this way, a strong sense of belonging plays a large part in driving away loneliness. If, however, there were cliques or unequal attentions were given in the family, we probably cued into them fairly quickly. For example, when parents of necessity, due to health or other reasons, need to give special attention to one child at the expense of another, it's natural for the non-special child to feel hurt or left out. Or when all four boys in the household run off to play, leaving their sister behind. Or when three older siblings lose patience and refuse to include the baby of the family in their games. As children, we're not thinking rationally about the situation. We just know that our needs got shelved. When parents are sensitive to our needs, they can minimize our hurt and disappointment by helping us deal with them. When they're not tuned in, however, we end up feeling angry, resentful, too needy, undeserving, or depressed. We also become sensitized to inclusion and exclusion in our second significant group experience, school. Each one of us wants to be a part of the in-crowd and dreads feeling like an outsider. If we're lucky enough to feel a sense of belonging in school, as well as a firm sense of individuality and self-sufficiency, we aren't likely to experience prolonged loneliness. However, if we're picked on, teased, labeled, or repeatedly left out when we want in, we may finally give up choosing to feel lonely over humiliated and rejected. This kind of formative experience can take a long time and a great deal of effort to sort out and overcome. When that doesn't happen, we end up in adulthood with our noses pressed against the window, forever looking out. Let's stop and feel again. When you stop and pay attention to how connected you are to yourself and to other people, what do you feel? Feel free to pause the recording at this time to pay attention. Now let's do a practice exercise, understanding family connections. The purpose of this exercise is to recognize the strength of connections among family members. The rationale behind this exercise is that the dynamics we experience in our family of origin provide the blueprint for how we react to people later in life. A good start in dealing with your loneliness is to understand its origin. Now here's what you do. On the following page, you'll be drawing a chart of the family in which you grew up, including your parents, siblings, and close relatives. Write your name under the stick figure in the center of the diagram. Next, you will draw stick figures representing the other people, including their names. Make the people you feel closest to nearest to the stick figure of you. You can pause the recording at this time to do this. Now that you've finished the exercise, let's reflect. What did you notice about closeness in your family? By examining your diagram, you should see a schema of the kind of connections or lack thereof you experienced growing up. How do they affect your sense of loneliness today? Feel free to pause the recording to write your response on the lines provided on the handout. Is feeling lonely the same as feeling bored or empty? Many people confuse being lonely with being bored. When you're bored, you ache to do something, and the cure is activity. When you're lonely, you long to be with someone, and the solution is people. You may even experience these two motions in tandem. When this happens, the only way you'll know whether you're yearning for people or action is to stop and take a minute to tap into your needs. Moreover, emptiness, a painful effect that is strikingly prevalent among people with eating problems, is often mistaken for loneliness. Feelings of emptiness occur when you either disconnect from your deepest longings and desires or have not found ways to meet them, leaving you rarely, if ever, feeling fulfilled. You may be afraid to discover or acknowledge your desires because you'll fail to reach them or because you think you're not worthy of them. You may be put off by the time and patience it takes to get to know yourself and to recognize what pleases you and what doesn't. You may even believe that if you start to uncover your needs, you'll feel greedy and want more than you can ever get. When you're cut off from authentic feeling, you don't really know what you're empty for and may fall prey to society's quick fixes, filling up on possessions, excitement, substances, recognition, or physical perfection, whatever that is. You may believe that if you have enough clothes, cars, books, CDs, vacations, children, bling, compliments, club memberships, or food, that you'll finally feel content and complete. However, trying to fill up solely on these kinds of externals is like topping off a leaky bucket. The faster you pour in the water, the faster it seeps out the other end. Lasting, meaningful fulfillment comes only from acknowledging and experiencing emptiness and letting it point you towards what will fill you up. The solution to emptiness may be engaging work or a sense of higher purpose. Often it's creativity and challenge. Taking the time to explore emptiness, painful as it is, will lead you to the unique experiences that will bring you a sense of satisfaction and fullness. Disconnecting from authentic feelings is the only one avenue that leads to emptiness. The other is knowing what would float your boat and doing nothing about it. You may feel deeply unsatisfied because you're an accountant, not an aviator, because you've always wanted children but are childless, or because you're afraid that novel you've been dying to write won't get finished. You'll continue to feel empty by refusing to follow what's in your heart. If you suffer from chronic emptiness, maybe now is the time to uncork the bottle and see what comes out. You can't fill yourself up if you don't know what you lack. Can I avoid loneliness? Some amount of loneliness is unavoidable and part of the human condition. Everybody has pangs of it now and then. One person might experience only an occasional hankering for human contact, while another might seek companionship almost 24/7, while yet a third might yearn for friendship, but also find it suffocating and therefore make do with loose, sporadic connections. The degree of loneliness people feel is partially dependent on what drives them. Some are highly inner-directed, getting their juice from within, while others are highly outer-directed and get energized from being with people. Most are a mix and enjoy solo periods as much as socializing. There's neither a right nor a wrong in being one kind of person or another, and each develops from a combination of nature and nurture. However, all things being equal, it makes sense that inner-directed people are less likely than outer-directed people to suffer from extreme loneliness. Moreover, people are lonely for a variety of reasons. Sometimes the cause is situational. They've just lost their mate of 50 years. They're new to an area, or the last of their children has just left the nest. Other people endure a deeper, more chronic and lingering loneliness that gets woven into the fabric of our lives. They keep to themselves, have few or no real friendships, and do most activities alone. Even when they're with people, they feel set apart and experience a social awkwardness and alienation that prevent them from making intimate connections. Obviously, this kind of loneliness is more profound and painful than the more transitory situational kind. Beliefs about loneliness. Because rational thinking leads to rational behavior, building a belief system that's sound and healthy is essential. Here are some examples of irrational thoughts turned into rational ones. First, I can't bear feeling lonely. The rational belief behind this, I can bear feeling lonely and any other feelings. Irrational belief. When I'm lonely, focusing on food is the only thing that makes me feel better. Rational belief. When I'm lonely, there are many ways I can feel better that don't relate to food. Irrational belief. I don't need people in my life. Rational belief. Everyone needs people in their life to a greater or lesser extent. Irrational belief. I always pick the wrong people and end up lonely, so why bother? Rational belief. There are wonderful people out there who will love and want to be with me. Irrational belief. I should never be lonely. Rational belief. Everyone's lonely every once in a while. Irrational belief. When I'm lonely, I have to find people to be with. Rational belief. Sometimes people are the answer to my loneliness and sometimes they're not. Learning to enjoy myself by myself will help me feel less lonely. Irrational belief. Food is a good friend. Rational belief. Food is a poor substitute for good friends. Now it's your turn to transform your irrational beliefs into sound, functional ones. Take your time and make sure each new rational belief feels right to you. They should be concrete and written in the present tense using an active verb. Feel free to use the list on the previous page, but make sure you come up with some of your own as well. Use the lines provided on the handout and pause the recording at this time to complete this. Practice exercise. What am I really feeling? The purpose of this exercise is to recognize the difference between boredom, emptiness, and loneliness. The rationale is that confusing loneliness, emptiness, and boredom makes it difficult to find a solution to eliminate or lessen the feeling. When you know exactly what you feel, an appropriate response is easier to find. So here's what you do. Use the chart on the handout provided to compare and contrast the differences between loneliness, boredom, and emptiness. Think about the last time you felt each of these feelings. For example, a physical manifestation of lonely might put, you might put crying, and under thoughts or about, you might say old boyfriend. A solution might be call best friend. You can pause the recording now to do this. Now that you've finished the exercise, let's reflect. Do loneliness, boredom, and emptiness manifest themselves physically in the same way or differently? When you're bored, do you often feel empty as well? Are there times when you may feel all three emotions at once? Pause the recording to reflect on the lines provided. Is keeping busy a cure for loneliness? Many people believe that keeping busy will keep loneliness at bay, but this isn't always the case. If you've just moved from Boston to Sarasota and don't know a soul, getting out and going for a walk on the beach by yourself or taking in a movie is certainly healthier than sitting in your condo every weekend, flipping cable channels. The same is true if you're lonely on a business trip or in a situation where you lack your usual routines, comforts, and connections. When loneliness is temporary, transitionary, or circumstantial, staying busy can keep your mind off of how much you miss your family and friends, your home, work, or even your old life. Finding interesting and engaging things to do on your own fosters adaptability, reinforces confidence and self-esteem, and helps you feel less lonely. Getting out and being active is also a great way to make new connections. On the other hand, in these transitory situations, what's wrong with feeling a little blue? Isn't your loneliness a testament to the firm attachments you've made? If you believe you need to eradicate all your lonely feelings or you'll become depressed, maybe you've never really been on your own or missed familiar attachments so much that you're at loose ends. Maybe you're scared to be by yourself because it means being with yourself. Or perhaps you've become so reliant on being with people that you only know who you are in relation to them and need to fly solo for a while to become acquainted with the real you. If your loneliness is pervasive and ongoing, you may use structure and activity as a distraction from pain. In fact, you may be addicted to busyness as a way of coping. If so, you're shortchanging yourself. Compulsively being on the go will always be a poor substitute for genuine intimacy, authentic self-reliance, being still, and experiencing your feelings. When relationships are abundant and meaningful, and you also enjoy being alone, you can stop racing around trying to fill up on mindless activity. The true antidote to loneliness is a healthy combination of strong internal resources and people in your life whom you love and who love you. Now let's do another practice exercise, your deepest wish. The purpose is to connect with your deepest yearnings, longings, and desires. And the rationale is that you can't find happiness unless you dig deeply through your fears and inhibitions to find out exactly what you learn for. So for this exercise, you'll just need some time and patience. Here's what you do. Find a comfortable position. Breathe deeply for 3 to 5 minutes until your mind is still and your body feels relaxed. When you're ready, pose this question to yourself. What do I need to be fulfilled? Wait for an answer to surface and then sit with it for a moment without judging it. Don't rush. And then ask again, what do I need to be fulfilled? Once more, be patient and wait for an answer. Keep gently asking the question until you find a response that resonates and is at the core of your wants and needs. For example, your answer might be to get married, and your second, to have someone who cares about me, and your final, to care more about myself. If you can't find an answer right now, don't judge yourself. Simply return to this exercise another time. You can pause the recording now to do this. Now that you've completed the exercise, what was your final answer? This exercise may be difficult, especially if you're impatient, so switch off the pressure. You'll know you've hit on the right answer when you feel a rush or click of emotion that says, yes, that's it. Were you able to continue asking the question until you hit on a response that rang truer than others? What was your reaction to your final answer? If you weren't able to find a true answer, why do you think that you couldn't? Pause to reflect. How does feeling lonely or empty drive me to focus on food? A focus on food to dull your pain and fill you up might seem a natural response to loneliness or emptiness. Obsessing about food, micromanaging your intake, and compulsive emotional eating are all distractions from your unknown and unmet longings. These activities seduce you into feeling focused, engaged, and productive through goal-oriented mental and physical activity. After all, you're doing something. When you're counting the calories you plan to eat tomorrow or the ones you ate today, you're full of energy when you feel you're shopping and cooking and making choices in preparation for a binge. Also, when you're lonely, fixating on food may feel safer than reaching out to friends or trying to make new ones. When you feel empty inside, a food obsession gives you a seemingly worthwhile internal goal. These activities are far easier than creating a network of people to enjoy and to be close with. Less risky than building a self that's brimming with achievement, integrity, curiosity, generosity, esteem, creativity, and delight. Unwanted eating is a way to top yourself off, but will always leave you feeling empty and unsatisfied. The same is true of trying to fill yourself up with pride for your thinness and self-restraint. Moreover, by using inappropriate and self-destructive ways to quell loneliness and emptiness, you reinforce an addiction to unhealthy behaviors and miss out on opportunities for genuine connection and a true sense of fulfillment. Sadly, you may believe that food is a more trustworthy companion than any person you've ever met. Having no needs of its own, what could be more predictable and at your service? People may disappoint you, but food always welcomes you with open arms. People may reject you, but food never. Makes you feel warm inside and sweetens the hours. It may remind you of meals that you enjoyed with family or even the closeness you experienced during your first feedings. On the other hand, denying your hunger may be a metaphor for renouncing all your needs. You may believe or want to believe that if you can say no to food, you can ignore your longings for friendship, your desire to succeed, your yearning for happiness, your cravings for whatever makes your heart sing. By rejecting food, you're trying to convince yourself that you don't need much. By conquering your physical hunger, you're trying to believe you can triumph over the hungers of your heart as well. Focusing on food may seem tailor-made for your loneliest hours, but deep down, you know you've chosen an activity long on promise and short on substance. You deserve far better. In order to find out what's missing, though, you'll have to suffer the pain of loneliness and emptiness first. And then you'll have to find the strength and courage to go out and pursue your desires. Think of all the energy you put into food obsessions and how wonderful you'd feel putting that amount of effort into building your self-esteem, developing true friendships, making a better world, and creating a life for yourself that is filled with passion and productivity. Further exploration. When I ask the following questions, feel free to pause the recording and write your responses on the lines provided on the handout. 1. What are the body sensations that tell you you're feeling lonely? 2. How would you describe the purpose of loneliness? Three, what are your secondary feelings about being lonely? Four, describe your family dynamics in terms of connectedness, attachment, privacy, intimacy, inclusion, and exclusion. Five, as a child, how did you handle feeling lonely or excluded? Six, if you feel empty as well as lonely, what are you empty for? Seven. When you're alone and still, which feelings surface and frighten you? Eight. What are the unhealthy non-food ways, such as enforced busyness, that you use to avoid feeling lonely or empty? Nine. What do you get out of focusing on food when you're feeling lonely or empty? 10. Why are you so afraid to seek out people when you're lonely? 11. How could you handle loneliness and emptiness more effectively? This completes this chapter of the reading. Feel free to review the materials as needed. Thank you for listening.